Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Okay then, welcome back into the House of Mystery. You are lucky to be here. I'm Al Warren, and sitting in Phoenix is the one and only Michael Butterfield.
Hi there.
You're always so butch. So, all sorts of stuff going on. We're pretty happy with what's this week's been like. Man, what a drag. Everything is just so, been a crappy week. Okay.
In some ways. Yeah.
Well, anyway, doesn't matter. We'll get into that a little later. So, today we've got a guest sitting in here. We've got, he's an author and he's a podcaster, Bruce Lemaster. How are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. just living.
Living. You sound like you got a lot of energy there.
Oh yeah.
So, Bruce, what brings you to the true crime world?
I've always been in the true crime since I was very, very little, because my mom and stuff, she read, you know, all the books and watched documentaries back then. And so I've always had an interest in all that. Then it just kind of took off on its own. I started writing to various killers in 2013 and just kind of started doing my own research and everything on various things.
Yeah, but you know, that's interesting. I don't know too many people that are writing to serial killers. Well, I guess there's a few, but I guess I don't know a whole lot of them. What's your interest in that? Like, what do you expect to get back from someone, like, when you write them?
I'm not sure, honestly, because some of them, you know, will talk about their crimes and stuff, but a lot of them don't. But at first, it was just kind of more just to see if I could get anybody to respond. And then I've kind of taken times off where I haven't wrote to a lot of them. Like, here recently, I've been trying to write to some new ones. Some of them I was just trying to write to because people said you couldn't get a hold of them. So I sent some letters out and got responses back from a few. But yeah, it's just, I don't really have an agenda, honestly, between any of them. I just try to see if they reply back and start a conversation. And some of them, I've talked to, actually the very first one I wrote out in California, I still talk to her to this day.
Oh, you going to marry her?
No.
Well, I just wonder because you see, every time I've written to one, there's been a lot of in the UK. I've got letters from Stephen Port and Ian Brady and a lot of British killers, but I had a reason for each one. I didn't kind of go, well, let's just see if they'll answer and send out a big pile. I kind of pinpointed the person that I wanted to, I guess, talk to. And I sort of had a reason as well, you know, more the mindset of that person or character. And even the last one that I met in prison, it was more about just their response to things and what they had done in the past, which is quite awful, some of them. So that's why I find it curious, because I haven't met too many other people like that. There's a few I know, but and you're the first one. And I was just wondering if you had kind of a way of choosing a person, and if you want to develop a relationship, if you want to get to know them by character or things like that, because I find that a very curious hobby.
So yeah, it kind of, yeah, like about every one of them, like I said, some of them, like if their case I find interesting, I'll shoot out a letter. So like I said, I just kind of pick things at random. Sometimes I'll stumble upon and be like, hey, I wonder if they're still alive, and then write to them, stuff like that. And some of them I'm just, like I said, just to write. And some of them, like I said, I've, besides the female, like there's a few other ones I've talked to for years. So I guess in a way, some of them I have developed. Like usually I always try to reply back to all of them, but if they don't reply back like a second or third time, then I don't really try to harass them or nothing. So sometimes I only get like one response back, and then if they don't write me back, then I just, after I send them a reply, I just kind of move on.
Was there anybody in particular that you got an interesting or unusual response from?
Not really. Like, one of them I was surprised. It's one of the recent ones I've wrote to. He actually got out of prison, but he had killed a child, and he attempted to kill another child, and he ended up getting caught. And this was like 8 years after the first murder. Well, he was sentenced to 40 years in prison, and he served, 28 years, I think, of it. Well, when he was getting out, like, the boy's dad and stuff's like, you know, I'll kill him if he gets out. Well, he ended up going into a mental institution. So last June, I was like, well, I'll see if he'll reply back. And because I've seen, like, letters and stuff of his for sale, like one, I think, and they said he don't write to anybody. So I actually, like, well, I'll try it. So with COVID and everything going on, you know, that was kind of my angle starting last year. I'm like, hey, you know, kind of talking about COVID and all that, see how they have to deal with that. And he actually responded back, and I've been talking to him since then. And he actually has talked a little bit about his crimes. He's one of them that actually did admit to what he was doing and stuff. So that was kind of an interesting one. Then the other one I tried that attempt with was Daniel Rakowitz. And he actually replied back to, and they said he don't really reply back to a lot of people. But I actually found out he actually plays the card game Magic the Gathering. That's a game I've played for 20 years. And he actually sent me a card from the hospital.
Oh. Wow. Well, I that's interesting. The whole thing is, do you ever, when you're talking to the guy that kills children, or has killed children, does that sort of affect you? Do you, because I mean, I see, you know, from your social media stuff, you have children, young children, and does it get kind of personal?
Yeah, in a sense, because like you said, with me having kids and stuff, I got three kids, and you know, they're all young. So, like on my podcast and stuff, I've actually talked about that when we cover like with a case involving a child. Like, those are the ones that, you know, they're close to home just with having kids, and not always the ones, because you're kind of like, you know, why are people doing that to children? And, you know, they really get to you. That's the ones that really stick with me mentally, because, you know, just what you read about what they actually done to a child or something. And some of it's pretty gruesome.
Yeah. Because you don't, I would think that would be hard. Mm-hmm. Especially when you know what they've done, and then you're communicating with them. And if they do start to tell you about it, I would think that that would be kind of weird. The last book I did, I talked to that guy, and he had killed two little girls, and he had raped them and shot them in the head and then burned their bodies. And when he was talking to me, he killed the youngest one first, and he was so matter of fact about it. And the way he said it was, she just didn't understand what I wanted. Like he had her tied up and he wanted to have sex, and she didn't understand how to do it. And he said he could only take that for a matter of a day. So he just shot her in the head. But the way he said it to me was almost like someone talks about sports or something, almost like they expect you to kind of go, yeah, you know, and agree with them.
Yeah, like it's a normal everyday thing.
Yeah, and I found that disturbing as it was, never mind, and I don't have children. So I could imagine having little kids and then thinking, how could they not be in your mind? And then he's talking about this and you're thinking, wow, this guy's a creep. That's all. That's my personal take on it. But
yeah, that's what kind of like, you kind of wonder in a sense if they're like, I've often wondered that with a few of them, like, do they see themselves as children in their minds? And that's why they target children. Like they never, you know, developed after a certain age. So they're drawing the children that way or something. Maybe.
Well, one thing, you know, when I talked to Jeffrey Rennick, who was with the FBI 40 years, and he did a lot of that child kill cases. And one of the most common things he came across was a lot of these killers have been, they experienced some sort of traumatic sexual thing at approximately the age of the people that they had as victims. And that was true in this particular case. This guy was tied up and had a bad sexual experience at the age of 9. And that, see, he was going for children that were 9 to 11. Uh-huh. So I don't know. I mean, you're probably as good a guess as me, but I sort of associated it with something that stuck with him. And he still sees himself at that age when he's doing these crimes.
Yeah. Which, like you said, with him having that experience when he was little, maybe that's just something that, like you said, traumatized him real bad. So maybe in a way, maybe he liked it or something and likes feeling what he felt then, maybe. So he tries to do it, you know, to get back into that sense.
Yeah.
In that time frame.
Yeah. There's definitely something going on. And of course, I'm not a doctor. So, well, not a doctor of that. but yeah. So what made you, okay. Now I see you've got a book out with this kind of a concept, and this is the Death Row Teddy Bear. So how did you hook up with this killer?
He was actually one of the first ones I started talking to, and I had read some stuff online, and I think I talked to one or two people about it, and they're like, you know, he'll respond to anybody. So I was like, well, I'll write him. So I ended up writing him, and I read him for, I would say pretty much 3 years. And I'd use, about on average, I'd get a letter a month because he was on San Quentin death row. So, you know, I'm in West Virginia, so, you know, it takes a little bit for regular mail to go through. And he was interesting because his letters are so hard to read. Like, I got pretty good at it for a little bit of time, but it just took forever to read them. Like, it would take me probably a couple of hours to decipher things that he said. And, you know, I just started writing them and then seeing where it went. And then I can't remember why I quit writing to him. I don't know if I ever replied back to him the last letter or what, but he ended up dying in 2019, at the end of 2019. So I was like, well, you know, 2020 was a weird year. So I basically worked on it, put it, you know, the book together, and thought I'd share it. And it'd be a different way to actually share actual letters and other things from him. So I thought that would be an interesting concept for people to look at, and just kind of done like a basic of his life and stuff growing up. Cause he was one killer that I wrote to that really bragged about what he done, had no remorse, didn't care. And like, he could be talking about the weather, then talking about, you know, killing, you know, one of his victims or somebody that he wants to kill and stuff like that. It was really, really out there. And he had a lot of stuff that he would always mention about kids and stuff too. That was kind of hard to read. But then he'd ask me how mine were doing, which was kind of awkward.
Yeah. I would think that would be that's kind of what I mean. Mm-hmm. You would feel kind of, I would think it would be intimidating in a way.
Yeah. You know. Yeah, there's one part, trying to think. Remember when people was leaving their kids in the car in the hot weather and they were dying and stuff?
Yeah.
Well, he mentioned that in a letter. And when I was reading it, I'm like, oh, you know, it's not, because he said he'd break the window and get them out. I'm like, oh, you know, that's nice. That's what most people would do. And then he's talking about he'd go pimp them and stuff. I'm like, okay, that's really, really, really out there.
Well, you got to save them so you get them to work, right?
Yeah, yeah. I guess that's the way he looked at it. But yeah, but same thing, because I never got to talk to him on the phone or nothing. Like I said, I'm states away, so I never got to visit him or anything. But actually, like, talking to other people and stuff, they said the same concept. Like, you know, it was just like, he would just normal thing. Hey, how's the weather? You know, and bam, talk about, well, I like killing people, and just normal conversation. Cause he thought to him, it was normal.
Huh. Do you think he felt any emotion at all? Maybe he didn't about killing, but did you sense any feeling from him, like love or anything from any of his letters?
No, not really. I knew some people that he said, because he always told me like new pen pals he got. And there was one he was talking about that he was basically wanting to rape him when he visited him and stuff, and then tell me what he'd do to him and everything. So it got really interesting, stuff like that. Like, if he was out in the street, he would still kill. Like, it didn't matter his, because he was, what, 73 when he died? Like, he could be 100 and still try to kill somebody if he would have ever got out. So there was like nothing, I don't think, there. But he said that he loved like animals and stuff like that. So maybe he had a love for animals more.
Well, it brings up an interesting point. Unlike a lot of the other killers that we talk about, he seems to have preyed on a lot of people he knew personally.
Yes, I found that interesting too, that it was people, like you said, he knew, well, pen pals as well, which one of them was, you know, his wife and well, her mother. And then, see, the last one he got was the lady that worked in the, I can't remember if it was an actual gas station, but it was a store, basically, kind of like a stop. And I think that was the only lady he really didn't know, besides some of the women that he had attacked and stuff, which I actually did get to talk to one of the ladies that survived him. She had passed away recently, but I got in contact with her daughter or granddaughter, I think. And like, I was hoping, I almost kind of talked them into, because they said they'd be interested in helping me, but then they kind of got to talking, you know, family didn't really want, you know, the information really, but what they had to say and felt about it to get out, which I understand, though. I understood their privacy, but, you know, just talking to them and things. And because my judgment, I figured what she went through, that she was traumatized after it. And, you know, I kind of feel that it stuck. I guess her whole life changed because he raped her and everything one night. And I guess she just looked like it ruined her marriage, and just paranoid of men, you know, just lived, like, tried to shelter everybody that she knew growing up from that, like her kids, grandkids, stuff like that, trying to keep them away from evil. Cause, you know, the tragic event that shouldn't happened to her. And, you know, when stuff like that happens, it really scares people, and they just kind of go in a shell and just afraid of everything.
Did you find anything different about the way he told his story compared to what's kind of known about what he had done? Like, was there a big differences in what he said?
That's one thing that it's hard. There are some things that's hard to believe with what he says. Because I think at one point I read somewhere that he had told somebody that he was in the Manson family.
Oh, really?
And I've never found anything, you know, through my research. And the hardest part I could ever get to in the book when I was doing it Well, it said that he was in Vietnam because he blamed a lot of that from being over in Vietnam. But then the one book about him that was written back in the 97, probably took a few years, but back in the 90s, he wasn't. And then there was a documentary that came out last year, and it showed his papers where he did go over there. And like he was, one letter he's talking about killing like two boys over there. And you don't know exactly what to believe because I talk about a murder that maybe he did do, maybe didn't do. He never told me about it, but he told other people, and I got them to share the letter that he said it. And I got to looking at it and tried to do a little bit of research, and it kind of don't line up with what we know about his murders, because the murder that he was claiming to have done, he would have been driving a lot, but it was after he killed his common law wife. He ended up, went from California, I want to say to Texas, I think, and then said he killed another woman. But then I read another letter where he talked about to somebody else, and he changed things. So each story about the person was different, and I'm sure, you know, it could be real, but a lot of evidence that I could find, he was just trying to add more to his victims, just kind of giving people what they want to hear type thing.
Hmm. Huh, you think he was bragging then? I think he was proud of it.
Yeah, he was basically, like I said, that's the way he was. He was just, because when people, like, find out that I, you know, write killers and stuff, they're like, oh, you know, because, like I said, a lot of them don't talk about it, and, like, he bragged about it. Like, every letter, it had something violent in it. Something about violence in the letter, whether it be, you know, his murders, things that he'd do to the pen pals, or, like I said, the things that he'd do to kids, or just anything. And then, you know, he would mention about it and just brag all day about it, but he gave people what people think that killers talk about.
Huh. Now, did he talk about how he was treated in prison? Like, was he in a situation because of who he was? Did the other prisoners treat him badly?
I don't think so, because he was on, like I said, San Quentin death row, and that's where a lot of them are at. Like, he talked about, he might not have got along with a few of them, but I know he said he talked about Richard Ramirez a little bit, and talking about, I guess, some of the drama with that, with some of the things. But yeah, it seemed like most of them in there kind of got along with each other, but there's probably, you know, some people, you know, might have hated him and stuff, but he didn't really say that anybody did.
Huh. Well, you know, actually, maybe tell us a little bit about the story, like who he was. You know, we didn't really cover that. We know, because we've sort of looked at this up, but what was he convicted of, and what did he do?
Like I said, he was a serial killer. He was from five murders in California and Utah between 78 and 91. Because when he killed his common law wife in 78, he went to prison, but he got out. Well, he tried to rape his mom, and he got a couple more years, so he got out in, let's see, trying to think, 1990. And then in 91, that's when he killed a girl that he went to college with, and then he ended up killing his wife that he married while in prison, and her mother-in-law, and then went across and killed the other lady at the store. And he was actually traveling, from everything I've read, to Kentucky and somewhere else to kill other pen pals. And there's actually audio of where he actually recorded the murders, which that's on that documentary as well. And I share the transcript of the audio of what he said and stuff, which is very, very corny things. But he was, like I said, wanting to go out there and kill the pen pals. I guess when he got arrested, he had a belt that had their names and like their date of death and everything. So he was, more or less, because his wife that he married in prison, I don't know why people wrote him, but he would play a game, like if they were religious, because some of the people that wrote, you know, it's through like religious and stuff. So he would play that game with them and try to be like, oh, you know, I found God, stuff like that. And then some letters he would write what he'd want to do to him and everything. Well, his wife didn't want him around her when he got out, so he kind of got upset about that. And that's why he went and killed her. He ended up getting a gun and going over there. And they, like I said, tried to do anything they could to get him not to come around there, and he still done it.
Well, you mentioned the how he sort of toyed with people, I guess sort of pretending to agree with their religious beliefs. Is that one of the reasons why I'm reading here? It says that he carved the words, "I love Jesus," into the backs of one of his victims.
Yeah, that was the college lady that he'd done that to. I'm not sure about her because she never wrote him while he was in prison. But I don't know. She might have said something during the time he had her. Or so what, kind like of the, he kind of like said played the game of like he was nothing matter, like he would lie about why he was in prison and everything for her. So yeah, it's just interesting with how he'd done everything, which I don't know if he was just practicing on her until he got to his wife or what, but I guess he just had murder on his mind and got whoever he could. But I guess he was taking her home a couple times too, and then eventually end up killing her.
Huh. So, well, you know, Jesus has a cell, right? It seems like people like him always seem to find Jesus or use that, you know, like that they're good people now.
Yeah.
You know, and did you say he tried to rape his mother?
Yeah, they, from my understanding, well, that's basically the way I read it and took it. But his mom and dad had visited him, like the way he's in San Quentin, and they were able to stay in a trailer, I think, on the property, which I don't know if they still do that now, but see, this would have been 85. But his wife was supposed to come with them, and she didn't. So they think that he kind of lashed out on his mother, but he had attacked her and one morning, and his father got him off of her. So that's what they basically assumed, that he was trying to rape her, or at least end up, if not killing her, but he ended up, you know, not getting that far. But yeah, his dad at the time was an older gentleman, but they said he fought and got Philip off of him. And I guess Philip kind of got all upset. The way I understood, they weren't going to report it, and then they finally did. And then that's why he got some more years added onto a sentence.
How did he keep getting out? Like, what was the issue with that? Was he just good defense, or
I guess in a way, because when he killed his common law wife in 78, I think it was second degree murder is what they got him on, so that's why he only got the...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
12 years. Well, a few years and then, you know, added on to it after that. But they were basically, I guess, trying to say like he targeted her type thing. But like he planned it out because he said that he wasn't going to be at their house that they shared because she was staying with her mom. And then she goes over there and he's there. So that's kind of how that played out. Like he lied to her. Like he planned everything that he'd done. But I just don't know how he didn't get worse sentence than what he got, which I'd say now if he'd done it after that, I'm sure he would have got a longer sentence just for the first murder.
Yeah, that's crazy. I never understand that. People keep getting away with murder and they keep getting out. It's kind of a strange system. Wow. So now when you do your podcast, How do you attack that? Like what do people expect to hear?
Me and my fiance, we kind of cover everything in it. Like, I'll share some like one of letters I've got from people and talk about their case a little bit. Cause I try, like, we'll talk about some of the well-known ones, like, but like with Ted Bundy, I done an episode on him, but instead of just on his crimes, I done it on his ghost. Cause I'm into the paranormal as well. So the whole episode was just me talking about his sightings of him as an apparition. And I had actually talked to a serial killer that was from West Virginia, but he had killed in Florida, and he actually knew Ted Bundy. And I asked, well, I'm trying to think, forgot how I brought it up to him, but he had mentioned knowing Ted Bundy and talking about they played like racquetball and handball together and always talked. That's what it was. I read a book with the Green River Killer with Gary Ridgway when Ted Bundy helped him.
Okay.
Yeah, the Bob Keppel book, The River Man?
Yeah, I think it's what it's called. Yeah, it's been years since I read it, but it had mentioned that Bobby Joe Long had went to prison and that Ted Bundy was like asking about his crimes and everything, and that's why I was like, okay, I'll ask him, and he mentioned it. Well, there's reports, like I said, that Bundy seen in that prison, and he told me it was a lie, that it was just guards made it up. And sometimes we'll, like I said, we'll talk about killers or missing people or unsolved crimes. Here recently, I interviewed a local woman that her child, well, her young son, he was like 25. He had got most likely murdered from everything, but they ruled it as that he had an asthma attack and then OD'd. But there was they had the people that he was with had drug him down the steps, a woman standing over top of him with blood all over. And when somebody caught them in the act, the dude that was with her took off running. And it was a whole mess. But like originally, my page and stuff was a blog at first, and I had covered a local case around here that happened back in 2002. And then I ended up turning into a blog and kind of just going with everything on it.
Huh. So where do you see yourself in 10 years? Where do you see yourself going with all of the true crime stuff, the writing and the podcast?
And I'm hoping, because I'm kind of in an area, like, there's support here, but there's not, you know what I mean? There's not. Because, I don't know, I've been called some bad names for doing, because there was another local case that we had covered years ago. And I was kind of going back into it and just trying to see if anything else, but like people got all jumped all over me for doing it. I'm like, you know, I'm trying to help because the murder happened in 2007, but a girl was found in her crawl space in the apartment she lived in, and nobody's ever been arrested for it. And it's an unsolved crime. And I'm trying to, you know, get people talking again, get out there in the public, because like everybody's been quiet about it. And then, like I said, I ended up getting kicked out of the group and everything too, for trying to talk to people and see what they knew.
Wow. Why do you think that is? Like what was the purpose of kicking you out? Do you think they're scared, or what's the deal?
I don't want to talk bad about the state I live in, but
right,
some of the people, I think their elevator don't go very high, and then they just, it's more like some of them's in that mindset, and then some of them, I think, are more or less, because I've done some things like locally in my town too, research, and it was like talking about it, and like they want to push it underneath the rug, and like, you know, that happened, but we're not going to talk about it, so we'll just keep it unsolved, and you don't need to care, nobody needs to care about it, which I find that weird. Like, I know it kind of brings up memories and stuff and traumatic stuff for the families, but like if I was personally, for me, if somebody done that, like was trying to research things and trying to find justice for, you know, a loved one that was murdered, you know, I'd try to give them as much support as I could. I know some families, you know, don't do that in a sense, or like it. Some of them just kind of stay out of the limelight. Some of them, you know, try to, you know, get out there and get justice for, you know, whoever they lost.
Yeah, it's a tough one, but I think personally you have to stay focused on what you want to do and try to ignore that noise from the naysayers. You know, I think both Michael and I can attest to that.
That
is going to happen no matter what, and you're going to get, you know,
you could do everything perfect and somehow complain about it and say you weren't perfect enough.
Yeah, yeah, you can't please them all, but I think you got to shut that out and focus on what you think is right and what you need to do, and just not let the noise get to you, because it'll affect the way you're doing it. So ignore that, you know, unless someone's physically threatening you or something.
I've never had that really so far, luckily. Like, most of it's just verbal things. That's about it. Which I did have a weird experience, in one of the towns I live about an hour from, but I was checking out, and this young couple that was probably around my age, they, like, the woman just stared me down like she was, I don't know what was going on. Then her boyfriend looked at her, or the guy she was with, and like he started giving me a hateful looks. I don't know if they recognized me or what, but it was a very uneasy feeling.
Yeah,
that was right around the time, because the local case I covered from 2002, it was Samantha Burns. She had got killed in Huntington, and this is where this all, where I was at when that incident happened. But I started writing one of the guys that was involved in her murder, because the weird thing is they had killed her. Well, they broke out of jail in Kentucky. Well, Chad was from here, and he was with Brandon Brasham. Well, they killed her, then they went to South Carolina, killed another lady, came back, then they split from here. Brandon got caught in Kentucky in the, well, in the Ohio River, and then Chad got caught in Indiana, where his brother lived. And, well, Chad's told them where Samantha's body's at, but they've never found her. Well, he finally led a group to the other lady they killed in South Carolina 7 years later. And they found her right where he said she was at. So I started writing to him in 2014. I'm like, you know, people's trying to, you know, get information out of him. He's trying to tell them. But I've talked to her family and everything too. So try to, like, you know, shoot some thoughts off them. But basically that case, I've cried on that case. I've put a lot of work in that, and, you know, I do it all on my own time. But it's weird, because I printed out a map and he showed me where she was at. I've went out there, and other people, like law enforcement, went out there. They can't find nothing, so they don't know if he's lying. The other guy said they dumped her in the river, yada yada yada. And well, in 2017, there was a guy that came out and on Facebook Live said that his wife had Samantha Burns and another person buried on the property in Ohio. So my blog, because I was actually doing a blog at that time, you know, with my research and sharing things that he had told me, and well, my blog blew up then locally. And so I don't know if those people recognize me from that. Like, so just the looks they gave me that was really, really out there. Like they were mad at me or something. I've never met the people in my life. So I don't know if it was, you know, them seeing me off that when all that blew up. Cause I had people from California contacting me, people from Canada, just everywhere, you know, trying to find out more information. And sad thing is that that guy like went crazy posting videos all the time. And at all points, like most of it looks like he lied about all of it, sadly. And they didn't find nothing on the property, and it was just really heartbreaking. Well, heartbreaking over it.
Yeah. That happens quite often. There's quite often they have an agenda behind what they're doing, and
People trying to send him money and everything. Like,
yeah,
he said he didn't want money, but I think somebody said they sent him like $2,000. But he was, some of the videos he posted, he was in a car, stuff like that. So I don't know if he was just on the run, living out of his car or what. He said he was staying with some buddies. Like, he seemed like a genuine guy in the video, but I don't know, just heartfelt on things. And then I've heard some other rumors and stuff, and talked to the guy, the detective that's on the case, and told him what I heard. So nothing's really came out of it. And this has been a couple years ago too. So it's one of those things I kind of put in the back of my mind at times, but it's always there. I always think about it. I've had dreams about it. Like that one's really, really affected me.
Yeah. It's quite the, true crime. This whole thing is, so do you have like a website and a place that you want people to come find you at, or for your podcast, or even for your writing and blogs and stuff?
I don't really have a personal website, but my Facebook page is Killers Crawl Space, and that's what the podcast is called, Killers Crawl Space. And if you go to that, the Facebook page, you can find everything on there, and I have a group as well. Or you could message me personally and I can get you what you need. Like I don't share as much, but usually we try to have a podcast episode out every Friday. Just kind of depends on what we got going on our personal life. And people can check us out there. Like I said, I enjoy talking to anybody about true crime. That's my passion. So it's kind of weird. Like I know a lot of people say it. It's like, I have to, cause I've taken time away from it a little bit, or try to, but I have to stay focused on it. Like if I do go a day without reading something true crime, it's weird. So I have to keep sane by reading and researching, about murder and all that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there seems to be a lot of people that way nowadays. So has this last year affected, the way you do your true crime search, like with the COVID and all the issues going on in the country, did it sort of take away from that?
Not as much. Like, luckily it hasn't affected me in the sense of like losing my job or anything. So I've been fortunate with that. So I've been able to still do things I need to do or try to, cause there was another local case that I talked to a lady about and covered. Like me and my fiance went out and actually tried to do a paranormal investigation where he was murdered at, so some of the things I do, I don't have to be out in the public where people's around. So I'm able to not be affected by anything.
Huh. So when you do these investigations with paranormal, do you like bring a medium or a psychic in any of that? Or how are you conducting them?
It's just basically with the equipment that I've had over the years, cause I've been doing that for, this year will be 13 years. So I kind of go in like, which my fiance, she is into the Wiccan stuff. So we'll set up like a little thing and she'll do like the pendulum readings and stuff like that. And kind of just do like a base feel of the energy at the place. Cause you can use like your sixth sense is your best thing you can ever have on anything like that. So, we'll set up things like that and just kind of get a feel. Cause we actually went to a cemetery. It was just to go. And we had actually got a reading with the pendulum and stuff. And this went on for like 30 minutes or so. And it's never happened anywhere else we've tried it at, but it gave us the same answer to everything because we have like a little math that has like yes and no and like maybe and stuff. But it was an individual. They said they came, they weren't buried at the cemetery, but they went there to visit someone that was buried there. They wouldn't tell us if it was a female or male, which I end up getting because when I do audio, I do, I put headphones in. So I hear it back while it's happening. And we actually caught a male voice that wasn't me. It was just me and her there. So it was like right around that time. But the site where the guy, the site where the guy was murdered at, we done the same thing, didn't get nothing, but it did have a weird vibe, which he got murdered at a rest area. So there was some traffic coming in, but it was kind of weird because we were there, you know, towards the evening and part of night. And we were literally like 10 yards from right where his body was found. And they don't know who killed him or nothing. Just he stopped there in between where he was from to where he lived. And next thing you know, he was shot execution style and left.
Wow. That's interesting. So did you get, have you ever got any sort of hits from paranormal side?
Well, some of the well-known places everybody knows about, like I'll get things from there, like, you know, West Virginia Penitentiary. I've got EVPs there, which that's actually, that popped up. Somebody, one of the paranormal groups popped up about the West Virginia Penitentiary, and I had went there 3 times over the years. Well, the first time I went, we were kind of provoking. This was 12 years ago. Well, I had got called a whore on EVP. And because when we came home that morning, me and my buddy both had recorders running. And like, I don't think I woke up to like 5 o'clock that evening because it's about a three and a half hour drive from me. So by the time we got home, so I passed out. Well, he woke me up that evening. He's like, dude, you got to listen to this. And then I had caught it too. Well, we were sitting one of the guys that got killed in the prison during the riot. Well, I ended up talking to an inmate there because when they closed down, they shipped inmates different areas. Well, I ended up finding one. Well, he broke out. How many times did he? I'm trying to think. He broke out of that place 3 times, I think. But he had killed an off-duty cop, I think, the one time they broke out. But I was telling him where I was going and how I had went there and stuff. And he gave me some information. Well, he said that guy actually called people whore all the time. And he was able to, like, tell me some other places to go. So when I went back years later, I was able to use some of the knowledge he gave me to try to get some other things. And I had it up as a blog for a long time, but I had some random person call me maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago. Cause I hadn't talked to the guy in forever. And he, I guess, was trying to do an appeal, I guess. And I had to take him down because like some of the things he said could get him in trouble.
Oh, wow. But the question is, are you a whore?
I don't know. Like, it was just funny because how it came over. And I'm, because it was me, my buddy and his girlfriend in the cell, and I was sitting on the bed, and it was just funny when it came over because he actually started feeling sick at the time too. So I don't know if that, you know, had something to do with it because we were in the maximum security part of the prison. But the way I understood, the guy had got killed outside a cell, like during, they had shoved a shank or something in his eye or something like that. But one of the interesting things actually with the penitentiary, there was a local thing that happened in my hometown. And I'd done some research. This guy tried to kill, one boy. I think he raped one, tried to kill another one, and two of them got out. Well, he lived in this area. Well, he was actually in the penitentiary. He died during a riot. He was one of them that got jumped because what he done, because he had killed a boy in Dunbar too. So, you know, child molester, child killer, you don't last very long. So he ended up getting, he's the one I think they pulled through the prison, and they said he stabbed him, kicked him, spit on him. And I just thought that was interesting because I like doing true crime and paranormal research and stuff like that. Like, I'm more into the research the older I get. And when things connect, I always find that fascinating. So, you know, find something that happened in my hometown that connected with the place I investigated was, I just found that interesting.
Huh. Yeah, the whole area is fascinating, you know. Wow. One thing, did you ever, was there anything that really surprised you about Philip when you had letters from him, something you didn't expect?
Not really. Like I said, was reading a little bit on him and knew how he was writing to people. Like, I didn't really get surprised on anything he wrote about.
It was pretty much as you would expect then.
Yeah, like I said, most people, when they think you're writing a serial killer, that all the killers are telling you what they've done and everything. Like I said, that's what he done, if not more. So he's your typical, like I said, he just don't care what anybody, you know, thinks about him, and he didn't care what he said. It seemed like the more gruesome he got, the better he felt about it, type thing. So I'm kind of keep an open mind on things like that, because a lot of them you talk to, like, a few of them I talked to, we just talk about, like, basic, you know, normal things in life. Because I wrote Dennis Rader and stuff for a little bit. And, like, he was interested in, like, the paranormal stuff I done. So we talked a little bit about that. And actually, the funny thing is, I'm left-handed. Like, I think I have sloppy handwriting. But I think I write the same. But some reason, he thought two people were writing him when I wrote him. Because he had asked me at one point, he's like, is somebody else writing your letters too? Because I guess I would change my handwriting throughout the letter, and I guess confused him. Yeah, it was kind of, I didn't hear back from him from like a while. Then somebody, I guess, that he talked to on the outside sent me stuff that said that he was going to write. Then I ended up getting a letter shortly thereafter. But because he, like I said, I've heard other people talk to him, and he like hints towards things. And then, like, with Bobby Joe Long, when I talked to him, we'd done basically normal stuff. But he kind of, because he raped his victims, kind of like more or less what Ted Bundy did, but he would leave women in, like, weird positions when they were found. And he kind of mentioned that. Like, he was a pervert, basically. So, Philip, like I said, was your serial killer that everybody would want to talk to if you want to hear the gruesome aspects of what they done.
Yeah, but did you feel you could believe everything he said then?
I guess when I went into, like, that, I kind of expected that he might lie about it. And then more things he told me, like something, like I said, with the unsolved murder that he mentioned to other people, like, he never told me about that, but he's told other people. I don't know when he started telling about it. So the older I get, the more I kind of look at that and like, well, I'll see what can I line up. So I try to compare, like, that's what I compared with that. I compared other letters that people had gotten about it. So at first I was kind of like, wow. And then the more I talked to him, the more, you know, I kind of done my own thing too and see where I could catch him in a lie or something at.
Quite a thing. And now, who are your influences? Do you have any influences in writing? Or in the true crime world? Do you have sort of anybody you look up to?
See, probably, like, writing-wise, because I used to never, well, I never really liked to read until in elementary school. When we finished our work early, we had to read. So I got into Dean Koontz back then.
Right.
So I've read pretty much, besides the books that are out of print, I have a few of them of his, but read pretty much almost all of his books, though. Like, Dean Koontz has always been one of my favorite writers. So he's kind of an inspiration, which I actually wrote him when I was in high school because they wanted us to, like, do a thing of thank you to a teacher. And I was like, well, I didn't really have a teacher to thank. So I wrote him a letter. I didn't know my teacher had sent it out, but she did. So I got a letter back from him, and he had signed it at the bottom and saying that he thanked me for my kind words and everything and stuff. So that kind of, if I ever get down about myself, I'll look at that because I have it framed and everything just to kind of give me inspiration. But with true crime field-wise, well, you guys have talked to him, you know, John Borowski. I love his work. About anybody really that, you know, that's in the field for a good reason. And I try to be supportive of everything that I can see out there in the true crime. Like I said, John's one of my biggest inspirations and stuff, especially getting to get to know him better here recently and talking with him and stuff.
Yeah, he hasn't killed anybody this year. Old John. Yeah, well, that's great. Well, fascinating conversation. Well, we will have your book and I'll have your Facebook linked up to the website so people listening can find you easy. Okay. It's really been a pleasure. Thank you for coming on the show. Our guest
is
Bruce LeMaster.
Prepared? Legacy Food Storage. The best way to protect your family is by being prepared. Go now to legacyfoodstorage.com. Use coupon code HOM15 now for 15% off. Quick, go!
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.